Chapter 16.
We can still catch him!
Amrila shouted with the light of battle still in her dark eyes. Wait up, partner! I shook my head and held up my hands. I'm not so sure about that idea. I mean, did you see how my bullets just bounced off of Ursinger? There's something weird going on there.
But we can't let the bastard get away!
The Zinkari woman argued as she furrowed her brow.
He's stronger than ever!
Maybe. I agreed. But this isn't a loss. We learned a lot here today. Information we can use to take him down for good. If we go chasing after him now, we could end up dead. I don't know what that sword of yours might do against him, but my bullets were pretty much useless.
It's better to regroup and come prepared for the next fight,
Nyla May said in her quiet voice. She's right, I said as I walked up to my fiery wife. I love how you're not afraid of anything, but we have to do this right. Otherwise, we've lost before we even got started. But I promise you, we'll kill him together when the time comes.
I will not let him hurt our Ibsith,
the red-skinned woman declared as she looked deep into my eyes. Me neither, I assured her in a quiet voice. We'll go see the dwarves and tell them what we know. I'm sure they'll be able to come up with something that will do the trick.
Let's not forget we've killed at least half of the Mad Chief's top generals, too.
Nyla May added.
That's a victory in my book.
Yeah. I looked around the woods to keep an eye out for any stray soldiers. He's not just going to bounce back quickly from that one. Let's try to get out of this fucking forest and get to the meeting place. We've got a long walk ahead of us. And with that, the three of us turned to the southwest and started the long journey back to the lands of the Dolrath. There was no question about using the road to find our way back. That wasn't an option. I was sure Ursinger had gotten back to his gaudy manor house by now, and would see all his dead guards in the ransacked rooms, and he would soon realize I knew his dirty little secret, if he didn't already. The Mad Chief would want revenge, but his forces were in ruins or scattered to the wind, and that was what would give us enough time to get away. We carefully picked our way through the forest, but we stayed on our guards for stray Yinni soldiers who'd survived the standoff, or had run away under our hail of bullets in front of the retreat. I also kept my eyes peeled for any signs of Bakoth or Scourge. We'd lost them in the tumult before we'd found Ursinger, and I had just hoped they were all right. I had come to think of them both as my friends. They were both capable men in their own ways, and I was sure they'd have gotten out of the forest just fine. But I'd feel better when I laid eyes on them again. As the women and I worked our way through the underbrush, I didn't see any signs of the other men, but there was mute evidence that they'd been here. Dead Yinni soldiers dotted the forest floor, even as we moved away from where the bulk of the fighting had taken place.
It looks like they were followed for quite a ways,
Nyla May commented as we came across another body dressed in light blue leathers. Yeah, I nodded as I bent to examine the long red wound across the dead elf's throat. But they fought every step of the way. My guess is they're still together.
Skrello has a very strange and specific moral code,
Amrila said as she leaned restlessly against a tree, like she was already bored after all the fighting.
If he fights, eats, or drinks tea with someone, they're as good as family to him. That's why he almost never eats in public.
That's an odd practice,
Nyla May replied.
Skrello is an odd man,
the horned woman lightly laughed.
He says it saves him from eating dinners with tiresome people.
We should keep going, I said, and I brushed off my hands and stood. We can rest once we get to the thieves' tunnels. Maybe we'll find our boys there. We continued on, but it took a few hours to find our way to the entrance of the thieves' tunnels in the south. None of us were very familiar with these woods, and we needed to make sure to give the Yinni city a wide berth, since there was no way of knowing how long it would take Ursinger to get back to the capital and raise the alarm. Navigating was difficult. But between my half-remembered skills from Boy Scouts as a kid, Nyla May's survival tactics, and Amrila's keen instincts, we finally found the tunnels, and I breathed a sigh of relief. There'd never been any indication that any of Ursinger's men knew where the thieves' tunnels were or how to navigate them, so there was a relative safety to the closed corridors and side passages. The three of us walked for as long as we could, but it had been a hard day, and we eventually needed to find an out-of-the-way cave within the tunnels to catch a few hours of sleep. The stone floor wasn't very comfortable, but exhaustion can help someone sleep almost anywhere. We chose to sleep in shifts, since these were still tunnels populated by thieves, and during my watch, I sat and sketched a little by the light of my headlamp. I had time to do one of Scourge and Gex the Ox outside of the gates of the capital, one of Bakoth brooding by the fire in the silken shawl, and then one of Amrila Nilame sleeping there in the cave as I watched over them. As I looked over my friends, I idly wondered what had become of the ox. I supposed we'd left him in the city. It made sense, since taking him into the woods on the raid wouldn't have been practical. But in all the excitement, I hadn't thought to ask what Scourge had done with him. At least I had this sketch to remember Gex by. He'd really stunk, but he'd seemed like a good ox. Once we'd all gotten some rest, the three of us continued on. It took ages, and travel through the tunnels was safer, but it became claustrophobic after a while. Thankfully, Amrila was able to take us most of the way to Bermshire through the thieves' tunnels, and we finally came out into the larger cavern, just outside of the gloom growth. As we snuck out into the open, I looked around for any signs of Yinni patrols.
"We might still be ahead of them,"
Nilame said as we skirted the edge of the mushroom forest.
"We only rested a few hours in the tunnels, and it takes time to organize an army."
"I sure hope so," I sighed. "I'm still good on bullets, but I'd rather not have to spend days dodging patrols to get back home."
"Where is home for the two of you?"
the Dolrath woman asked in a tone that brimmed with curiosity. But when I hesitated, her expression softened.
"I understand. You have your reasons for keeping it a secret."
Amrila and I slowed our pace and looked at each other for a moment. I liked Nilame, and I was pretty sure I could trust her. God knows I was attracted to her. But this was like a superhero taking off his mask and revealing his secret identity to a woman he's involved with. It didn't just put him in potential danger, it put her in danger too, if the supervillain thought they could use her against him. "I don't think it's a good idea for you to know just yet," I said with an apologetic wince. "But one day, maybe you'd like to come and see it for yourself." The warrior woman gave me a mysterious look I couldn't quite place, and then she smiled.
"I would like that,"
the dark-haired elf said in her quiet voice, with a shy smile on her face.
"Yes, I would indeed."
The women and I continued on to the entrance tunnel of the Dolrath territory. I'd hoped we would have caught up with the Zinkari thief and the Dolrath warrior by now, but I had to trust that they would make it to the meeting point by the eastern lake. The three of us descended into the connecting tunnel just outside of Bermshire Cavern, and as we came out onto the lands of the Dolrath tribe, I felt a profound sense of relief. For the first time since we'd entered the forest near the Yinni city, we were safe. Ursinger wouldn't bring his soldiers down this far into the gloom unless he was ready to declare an all-out war with Ekname. Finally, we came to the edge of the clear lake, and I saw Scourge lounging against a boulder with a supremely bored expression. Meanwhile, Bakov had a wicked twinkle in his eyes as he annoyed the Zinkari man with a small pocket flute.
"Thank the gods,"
the dark-skinned man said with clear relief as he saw the women and I walk toward the lakeshore.
"I was prepared to ram that infernal thing down that man's throat if you didn't show up soon."
"Glad to see you boys are getting along," I chuckled as the mohawked warrior put his tiny flute away. "Are you both okay?"
"We got caught up with a particularly tenacious captain and his unit,"
the horned man said nonchalantly.
"Shame we had to kill him," Bakoth sighed. "He was an excellent tactician."
"Yes,"
Scourge nodded as he maintained a serious expression.
"Was. How did all of you fare?"
"We found Ursinger," I said, and then I explained our encounter in the forest, with the partially transformed generals and the pendant that seemed to have embedded itself in the Mad Chief's skin. "Do either of you know what any of that means, or how he was able to do those things?"
"Magic requires an exchange,"
the Zinkari man mused as he ran a hand through his thick, dark hair.
"If you want to make something, something else has to be destroyed. But for something like that, I don't even know what the cost would be, unless Ursinger is sacrificing his body."
"He didn't look well."
Amrila shuddered at the memory. "That reminds me," I said as I took off my backpack and looked through it. "Can you read this, Skrello?" I handed the parchment we'd found in Ursinger's dungeon to the dark-skinned man.
"God have mercy on me,"
the Zinkari man breathed, and his eyes widened.
"I would guess this is the contract you were looking for. It's in Enochian and everything."
"You guess?" I repeated. "You can't read Enochian either?"
"Most Zinkari can't, unless one of their parents was actually a demon,"
the elegant man explained as he started to gather up his things from where he'd been lounging by the lake.
It's a forbidden language in the gloom, because it has power to it. My father taught me how to speak it in secret, so that I could use its magic to protect myself when I was little. But without proper instruction, that power is very limited. I don't think he even knew how to read Enochian.
Well, let's hope this is enough to convince Chief Ekname, I replied as I rolled up the parchment and put it back in my pack.
My mother is a cautious woman.
Nilame shook her head.
She will want definitive proof before she moves against Ursinger.
Really? I could almost feel my chest deflate. All of that was for nothing?
Oh, no.
The princess said with a mysterious smile.
This is compelling evidence the Mad Chief has some connection with a demon lord named Belzad.
Don't speak the name.
Scourge hissed as he looked at the Dolrath woman with a scandalized expression.
Names also have power. Why do you think I keep mine to myself?
The point is,
the dark-haired woman continued with a sidelong look at the horned man,
that my mother also hates Ursinger, and I think she will scour the gloom for someone who can read this and tell her what it says. She will just want to know exactly what it says before she decides what action to take.
I can respect that. I nodded as I started to lead the way southwest, along the lake to the encampment. Your mother seems like a wise leader.
Or overly cautious,
Amrila muttered.
No offense meant, Nilame, but the longer we wait around to do anything, the more powerful the Mad Chief could become.
None taken,
the Dolrath woman said in a mild tone.
You are entitled to your opinions.
You have a point, partner, I said to Amrila as we walked along the marshy land that surrounded the crystal-clear lake. Either way you go, there's a risk. If we tried to attack Ursinger now, he won't have time to prepare. But we could also fuck things up. There's a lot we don't know, and there's not many of us. But if we wait and prepare, he has the same amount of time to make plans.
I've been a soldier all my life,
Bakoth offered as he looked out at the lake with a philosophical air.
And in my experience, the element of surprise will only win a battle, not the entire war. I think His Highness is right. We need to take the time to plan our actions.
Our group lapsed into a contemplative silence as we walked, and soon the edge of the tent city came into view. There was something I loved about coming to the encampment. It was one of the few places in the gloom where I felt comfortable enough to walk around without my face covered. There was an element of that in Bermshire, but the threat of the Yinni guards showing up at any time made it impossible to relax. Here, I was a known entity. Eddie the Goblin King. The five of us walked through the encampment, and several people stopped to watch us pass as we turned toward the large, wooden meeting house. Soon, there was a stir in the city, and more people came out of the tents and onto the dirt streets as word traveled ahead of us. By the time we got to Ekname's meeting house, the doors stood open for us, and an honor guard of Dolrath soldiers flanked the street that led up to the only permanent structure in the encampment. As we entered the meeting house, I saw Nilame roll her eyes while the line of warriors saluted us. So clearly she wasn't one for fanfare. I stepped into the Dolrath chief's meeting hall and up the dais where Ekname sat and waited for us. The chief didn't smile, but she didn't look pissed either. Ekname's expression was unreadable, and that made my stomach knot up as I approached her. Chief Ekname? I greeted the tall night elf woman as I respectfully bowed my head.
So, this is where my daughter went,
the chief said with mild amusement.
I was beginning to wonder if she'd been kidnapped by goblins. It appears I was not far off. Hello, mother.
Nilame approached the dais and went down on one knee briefly in a ceremonial gesture.
I think you will want to hear what Eddie has to say. Eddie!
The older woman repeated with a raised eyebrow.
So informal. Well, Eddie, king of the Tectris Forest Goblins, tell me, what do you have to say?
I found the evidence you asked for, I said as I took off my backpack and set it on the closest table to look through it. I can't read it, but I'm certain this is a contract between Chief Ursinger and a demon lord named Belzat. As I handed the parchment to the Dolrath chief, I went on to describe my encounter with Ursinger in the forest outside of the retreat, and how he had transformed the two Night Elf generals into hideous, mindless monsters. The entire hall went silent as I spoke, and every warrior present hung on my every word. Ekname unrolled the parchment and examined it while she listened to me without interrupting. And when I was finished, the chief looked to her daughter.
And you witnessed all of this, Nalame?
The imposing older woman asked.
I helped Eddie fight the abominations.
The Dolrath princess nodded.
Amrila did as well. I am not familiar with this script,
Ekname said as she looked back down at the parchment.
But the chief of the Karadu or a member of his court might be. The Karadu tribe are renowned for their scholarly pursuits. I will take this to them and discuss what the next appropriate steps would be.
If it's not presumptuous of me to ask, I interjected. I would like to go along with you when you do that. I have to go to take care of some personal business at the moment, but I can return soon.
That is a reasonable request.
The Dolrath chief agreed with a nod.
I will need time to make preparations anyway. Thank you for bringing this to me. It is possible you have done the Dolrath and all of the gloom a great service today.
The formality of the chief's speech kinda threw me off, so I inclined my head to acknowledge her thanks. I wasn't used to formal occasions on the surface, and the etiquette of the Dolrath was equally a mystery to me still. Thank you, Chief Ekname, I said as I put my backpack back on. I'll return soon. Ekname nodded her head to me in return, and I backed away from the dais and turned to leave. Amrila turned to leave with me, and so did Scourge, Bukoth, and Nylame. Then the five of us left the meeting house and stopped out under the street to say our goodbyes.
I'll go back to the Yinni territories and see what I can dig up there, the Zinkari man said as he shook my hand. It's been a pleasure, Eddie.
Thank you, Skrello. I smiled at the dark-skinned man. I couldn't have done this without you.
I know, the horned man replied with a mischievous grin. You can repay me by bringing me more of that lovely tea when you come again.
I'll do that, I snorted. Then the Zinkari man shook everyone's hands in turn, put up his hood, and melted into the crowd of people going about their daily business in the city streets.
When you return, I would take it as kindness if you both would have dinner with me and my wives,
the mohawked warrior said as he too shook my hand.
They would be delighted to meet a goblin king.
I'm sure they would, I laughed. And of course, we'd love to have dinner with your family. Thanks for everything, Bukoth. You're a fine warrior.
As are you.
The red-haired man smiled and roughly patted my shoulder.
It's an honor to be sword brothers with you. You'll excuse me, Lady Nylame. I'm sure my wives have missed me greatly.
The Dolrath captain bowed to the princess, turned on his heels, and left for his home and his reportedly ugly wives that he loved so much. I turned to say goodbye to Nylame, and I noticed that Amrila stepped a few feet away as she pretended to become very interested in a sign outside of a shop.
Thank you too, Nylame, I said in a quiet voice. You are amazing.
I look forward to your return, Your Highness,
the warrior woman said as a small smile crept to her full lips.
I'll be counting the days.
Then the dark-haired woman leaned forward and kissed me softly on the lips. I felt a jolt of electricity at the touch of the warrior woman's tongue, and I slipped my hand around her slim waist as I kissed her back. The kiss was brief, but it left a lasting impression. As we pulled back from one another, I was surprised to see the girlish smile on the usually serious woman's oval-shaped face, and without another word, the Dolrath princess turned and walked away with a confident strut that caused her hips to swivel in a very pleasing manner. I grinned foolishly as I watched Nylame leave until I heard a wicked giggle next to me. Then I looked and saw Amrila smirking up at me.
She is very beautiful,
the horned woman cooed.
But I'm not going to share my room. You'll have to build her another one, or share the room with her in Ibsith.
Stop it, I snorted. It was just a kiss, and no one's asking you to. Let's go home. The Zinkari woman and I left the encampment and started the journey through the Dolrath territory to the southern Iron Door, and within a few hours, we were back in the surface tunnels and then at the metal latch that led to my backyard. As we came out into the late afternoon sun, the half-demon woman grumbled from under her sunglasses, but I felt a profound sense of calmness and contentment. I was finally home again, and that feeling was cemented by the sight of Ibsith as she ran out of the back door to greet us. The elven woman looked like an angel in her flowered sundress, and her full breasts bounced as she bounded toward us. Then, my first wife leaped into my arms, and she kissed me deeply as she ran her fingers through my hair. The magic of Ibsith was that each kiss was as exciting as the first, and I felt something stir in my core. Her love and the feeling of her voluptuous body against mine renewed and refreshed me as the fatigue of the last few days fell away.
My king!
The white-haired woman whispered into my ear.
You are finally home!
I missed you. I rumbled as I held the blue-skinned woman tightly. Was everything okay?
Oh, yes.
Ibsith nodded as I set her back down on the ground.
Stanton was not a problem. Mrs. Tynor told her husband about how that horrible man has been harassing us, and I guess Mr. Tynor used to be a please man because he asked some of his please friends to patrol the cul-de-sac at night. There were no problems after that.
Please man? I repeated in confusion before it dawned on me. Oh, do you mean policeman?
Yes.
Ibsith blushed at her mistake.
But I am glad to have my family home.
The elven woman suddenly threw her arms around Amrila and almost knocked my red-skinned wife over, but the Zinkari smiled tolerantly and hugged her back. Then Ibsith let go, took both of us by our hands, and led us toward the house.
Come, my loves.
The violet-eyed woman purred.
Let's celebrate your return home with some delightful pleasure.
Once we were in the house, Ibsith turned to me while she still held onto Amrila's hand and grabbed the front of my shirt. Then the elven woman pulled me to her again and kissed me again. The kiss was passionate, but brief, and as soon as she pulled away, Ibsith turned and kissed Amrila fully on the lips. I didn't know who was more surprised, me or Amrila. I watched the half-demon woman stiffen with shock, but after a brief moment, she leaned into the embrace and lightly touched the white-haired woman's face as she began to kiss her back. Then I noticed Ibsith watching me out of the corner of her eye, and a little smile played at the corners of her pouty mouth. Come on, I growled as I put a hand around each of their waists and gently pushed them toward the master bedroom. There's something I've been wanting to do. Amrila and Ibsith ran down the hallway before me in a fit of giggles. The sexy pair tumbled through the bedroom door before I could get there, and by the time I came through the door, I found the two of them on the bed as they waited for me. The women kneeled on the covers and watched me come in. Then, with a wicked little grin, Amrila ran her hands up Ibsith's torso and along one of her large breasts.
Come here, partner,
the Zinkari woman commanded.
Suck on your first wife's yummy nipples while I get this wretched armor off.
But before Amrila got off the bed, she took hold of the straps of Ibsith's little dress and pulled them off the blue-skinned woman's shoulders. The elven woman's ample breasts fell out of the front of her dress, and Amrila bent down to gently kiss and lick Ibsith's plum-colored nipples.
Oh!
Ibsith gasped and threw her head back in delight. After a moment, Amrila crawled off the bed and came up to me with hooded eyes filled with desire. The half-demon lightly danced her fingertips across where my erection pressed against my pants, and then she pushed me toward the bed where Ibsith was pulling her dress off over her head. As the little sundress came off, I could see the rose-colored lacy panties she wore underneath. I quickly pulled off my shirt, unbuckled my pants, and let my clothes fall to the floor. As I climbed onto the bed, I pushed Ibsith back and covered her in kisses and paid special attention to her neck, breasts, and nipples. The elven woman sighed.
Yes, my king!
Then my first wife took hold of my face with her delicate hands and pulled me up to look in her eyes.
I want you inside of me first,
she breathed.
As first wife, it is my right.
Your wish is my command, I said as I moved on top of the writhing elf woman and inserted myself into her tight, wet tunnel.
Oh, yes.
She whined. Fuck, you feel so good. I missed you so much. Ibsith squealed with pleasure as I began to move in and out of her with slow, deep strokes.
Not as much as I missed you, my king.
Usually, I would tease and play with the blue-skinned woman before I went to town fucking her. But there was something raw and visceral about this time, and my thrusts quickly became more urgent as her whines of pleasure filled our bedroom. It was as if a wild sex goddess had bloomed inside of my usually mild-mannered wife, so I went with the flow, and being inside her right then felt so right. I moved a hand to cup one of Ibsith's incredible breasts as I bucked against her, and then Amrila climbed onto the bed and laid down next to us with her red skin bare. Somehow, she'd already removed her elaborate leather armor. I reached down between the Zinkari woman's legs with my other hand and felt the slick wetness of her pussy as I began to tease her clit. The horned woman moaned.
I love watching you fuck her, Eddie.
I can tell. I growled,
Your pussy's gushing.
Only for you, husband.
The half-demon panted. I could feel Amrila's hands start to touch and caress Ibsith and me as she jumped in on the fun, but I wanted more. I took hold of Ibsith as I rolled us both over, and then I looked at the naked Zinkari woman in all her glory. I want you to sit on my face. I rumbled to Amrila as Ibsith straddled my cock and continued to buck her hips back and forth with wild abandon. The red-skinned woman obliged as she threw her long, firm leg over my face, and then she lowered her trembling womanhood over my waiting mouth.
Oh, fuck!
Amrila stammered when I smacked a wet kiss against her engorged clit. Then I started to suck and lick at Amrila's sweet, tangy pussy, and the horned woman reached for Ibsith and pulled her into a kiss. My wives made an archway above me as the three of us lost ourselves in the pleasure of each other's bodies, and as I satisfied them from beneath, Amrila and Ibsith touched and teased one another to heighten their sensations. They caressed one another's breasts and playfully licked each other's nipples, and I felt as Ibsith's velvety tunnel began to tighten and contract around my throbbing cock. Ibsith mewled as she spasmed with delight, and then the elven woman's back arched as she came. Fuck! I gritted out through clenched teeth as I tried to stave off my own orgasm for just a little bit longer.
Eddie!
Ibsith whined as she bucked and thrashed on top of my cock, and I felt my eyes roll back in my skull as her pussy got tighter and tighter around my cock while she climaxed. I focused all of my energy on eating out Amrila, but then she orgasmed a half moment later, and I used up 99% of my willpower trying not to come while both of the women screamed my name and rode my cock and mouth in ecstasy. The elven woman panted after they'd both come down, and she lifted herself off my throbbing dick with a wet slurping sound.
Now, you must orgasm for us, husband. We each need your seed.
Amrila moved from off my face and tackled Ibsith to the bed, and the blue-skinned woman shrieked and giggled with surprise.
Take me, Eddie,
the red-skinned woman said as she wiggled her tight ass at me.
Fill me up to the brim with your cream. I will keep our princess occupied while you do so.
Amrila pushed Ibsith to the bed and then lowered her face between the elven woman's legs as she started to lick the white-haired woman's sopping wet pussy. My cock began to throb even more painfully as I watched them on the bed next to me, and Ibsith writhed while Amrila licked and teased her little pink clit. It was hot as fucking hell, so I moved myself into position, grabbed the horned woman's hips, and pushed myself inside her slick, ready hole. Came the Zinkari woman's muffled groan as I filled her up. I started to thrust in and out of Amrila as I watched her pleasure the elven woman, and we all moved together and became one being of carnal desire. I moved one hand along Amrila's hips and then down between her legs to massage her clit while I fucked her, and she somehow became even wetter. The red-skinned woman began to buck harder against me, and Ibsith's panting became quicker as she responded to the horned woman's desperate tongue-lashings.
Oh, by the gods, that's so good!
Ibsith whined.
You're both so amazing.
Me too, I growled.
Yes, Eddie!
Ibsith gasped as she began to spasm.
Fill Amrila up. Pour your seed deep into her. Now!
Ibsith orgasmed again, and then the tight coil in my stomach snapped as my balls tensed. A thousand needle pricks of blissful agony descended my spine, and my balls tightened as I sprayed my first volley of sperm as deep as I could inside of Amrila's soaked pussy. The beautiful half-demon whined as soon as she felt me begin to pour my seed into her, and I felt the red-skinned woman's tunnel jerk around my shaft as she suddenly climaxed with us. The three of us formed what felt like an endless circle of pleasure. Each time my balls tensed, another gush of my jizz flowed into Amrila. She whined when she felt my heat flood her womb and urgently licked Ibsith's pussy. Then, the beautiful night elf climbed higher in her climax and begged me to keep filling up my other wife with my seed. The cycle seemed to repeat itself for a good 20 times, but eventually, after what felt like 10 minutes of incredible pleasure, we all came down and let out gasps of relief as we collapsed. Both women fell to the bed in a warm embrace like two kittens in the afternoon sun,
and they softly began to kiss each other as they stole smoldering glances at me. Somehow, I was still hard as a rock, and they both began to tease my sensitive tip by taking turns stroking the head of my penis with their fingers.
I feel a bit selfish taking all of your seed today.
Amrila purred as she moved her fingers from my shaft and began to gently squeeze my balls.
Feels like there might be some more in here for Ibsa. I would love to feel our husband's seed inside of my womb, if he is able.
The beautiful night elf purred. I would love to. I want to come inside both of you. I lowered myself on top of Ibsith, and she looked at me with glowing eyes as she spread open her thighs. Then my first wife wrapped her legs around me as I slid inside her again, and her hips lifted to meet mine. Then I was pounding deep and hard inside of her again.
Ah! Yes, my king!
She cried out with each of my deep thrusts.
Fill me up with your strong seed! Yes.
My half-demon wife purred in my ear as she began to rub her fingers down my spine.
Fuck her hard, Eddie. Fill her up with as much cream as you just filled me up with.
Yes. Yes. Yes! I growled as I started to pound the priestess's perfect little body like a jackhammer. And soon a sweet pressure built up inside me and demanded to be released. Then, with one final thrust, I filled the curvy elven woman with the seed she wanted so badly, and she came around me one final time. We both held each other tightly as we shook through the aftermath, and I covered my wife's face in kisses until my softened cock slipped out of her gushing tunnel. The three of us laid there for a long time in a tangle of limbs and the juices of our lovemaking. I'd never felt so contented, and even though it was still early evening, I must have fallen asleep. I was startled awake by the sound of my phone ringing, so I gently untangled myself from my wives and found my cell phone in my pants on the floor. The screen said it was Travis Meyer, so I grabbed my boxers and snuck out of the room so I wouldn't disturb my sleeping wives.
Hello?
I answered the call in a quiet tone, and I struggled to hold the phone and pull my shorts on.
Hello, Mr. Hill.
I heard Travis reply on the other end.
It's after business hours, so I won't keep you long. I just wanted to let you know that the money for your home purchase has been wired to the escrow account, and the escrow process is started. Unless something unforeseeable happens, you'll own your new home in 30 days.
Hell yeah! I cheered as a broad grin spread across my face. And just like that, I'd bought my first actual house. End of book 3.